On this special edition of New York Now, the death of George Floyd in Minneapolis this year renewed discussions on how police and communities of color interact. This week, we'll bring you a conversation between people in power and people in the community on where things stand and how things could change. It's called The Time for Reckoning, and it's brought to you by WMHT in partnership with the Times Union, the New York State Writers Institute, and the Center for Law and Justice. Stick around, that's coming up. I'm Dan Clark, and this is New York Now.
Today, the Senate majority will pass
legislation that prohibiting it, and we will take them to court challenging it.
Yet another stand for New York and sending a message to the nation.
Welcome to this week's edition of New York Now. I'm Dan Clark. When George Floyd was killed by police in Minneapolis this year, it set off a string of protests around the country, including right here in New York. And it was only a few months later that protests erupted in Rochester over the death of Daniel Prude, an unarmed black man who died after an interaction with police. We've come to label this as civil unrest, and there is a long history in New York of tension between police and people of color. This week, we're going to bring you something special, a discussion about that conflict, the perspective of the community, and how leaders respond to it. It's a project we've been putting together with the New York State Writers Institute, the Center for Law and Justice, and the Albany Times Union. So our good friend Casey Seiler from the Times Union is here to give us a preview. Casey, thanks for being here.
Dan, it's great to see you. It's great to be back in the studio for the first time in 7 months.
I know. It feels like we're back 7 months earlier from right now.
if I may take a moment, you were doing fantastic job with the show.
Thank you so much. I hope that all of our viewers feel the same way. So this is called The Time for Reckoning. It's something that we've been producing. Our fantastic Nicole Van Slyke, here producer at WMHT, has been putting together with the Times Union, the Writers Institute, and the Center for Law and Justice, which people in Albany will know is run by Alice Green, is pivotal to the community. Tell me what we're going to see, and we're going to roll a clip of it, I should say. That's what tonight's show is. Tell me what we're going to see on the show tonight and what we should expect for the full program.
It's an interesting, what you might call a socially distanced exchange of views between two groups. One made up of four leaders, I think it's fair to say, of the Black Lives Matter movement, the kind of young activists who found themselves in the street in the wake of the killing of George Floyd and everything that has happened since then. You mentioned Daniel Prude in Rochester as well, talking about their level of frustration, their level of expectation, their demand for not just reform, in other words, tweaking things around the margins, but a fundamental change in the way that power structures, especially law enforcement in this community, as of course the charge has gone out throughout the nation, needs to change.
So let's talk about who we're going to see in the program. We have, and I should say, this program is Albany specific in terms of the people that you have on it. But the reason why I and our producers here wanted to air on New York Now is because this is a conversation that all the cities in New York State are having, and it's important everywhere. Daniel Prude is in Rochester, or was in Rochester, and it's just something that all cities are talking about. So in terms of who we're going to see, tell me about the leaders from the city and who is going to be involved in that. I understand it's the mayor, but go ahead.
Yeah, the activists are basically filmed having kind of their own discussion, and then we bring it back into the studio where I am moderating a discussion with Chief Eric Hawkins of the Albany Police Department, Mayor Kathy Sheehan, and Corey Ellis, who is the president of the Common Council. All three of them are taking part in a collaborative effort that is one of the dozens, if not scores, of similar efforts that are being undertaken to press for the reinvention, you know, the reform of policing around the state in response to Governor Cuomo's executive order that, of course, followed the protests in the wake of the killing of George Floyd.
So Albany has a history of some tension between people of color and the police. And we had different killings of unarmed black men in Albany and the surrounding areas. We had Dante Ivey right here in Albany. And then after George Floyd died, we saw Albany as one of the cities around the state that really erupted in protest. Do you touch on that in your discussion with them?
Yeah, what's interesting is, of course, the case that the activists make with great frustration is that it feels like the only way that they can achieve change, get their foot in the door, make their voices heard, is to take to the streets. what, of course, the city officials say, you know, the mayor, the common council president, and the chief of police, is that they want to create an atmosphere where those activists can feel like they, like their voices are heard, like they can come in, that it's a dialogue and not so much a screaming match, or for the activists to feel like they're just kind of screaming into the whirlwind, as it were. And of course, activists, as you well know from covering the Capitol, activists are unrelenting. They are defined by their demands. Elected officials, the heads of large institutions like police departments, are by their very nature institutionalists. You know, they need to both try to change what is wrong about that institution while also preserving what they see as the values that are inherently good within.
So did they talk about, this is the part of this that I'm curious about most, is how this whole conversation is going to happen around what the governor is mandating, which is essentially a community by community reform of how they police their own communities, how law enforcement functions. Did the leaders from the city have anything to say about how that's going? I know it's only been a few months since the governor gave that order, but the clock is ticking.
Well, and there were sort of immediate responses. Mayor Sheehan put out her own executive order banning chokeholds, making other sort of immediate changes that she could make right away. Subsequent to that, the Common Council has begun the consideration of legislation that would, for example, grant subpoena power to the Police Review Board. Like many community boards, they are well-intentioned. They tend to be toothless in the sense that they can't, you know, they have a very limited role in sort of the disciplinary process for police. But all of these civic leaders are putting a lot of chips, as it were, over a large collaborative, more than three dozen people, including all of those, you know, leaders that I mentioned, as well as, you know, other city officials, people from the Albany School District, leaders of nonprofits, and even some activists as well. A reform and reinvention collaborative that, once again, is responsive to the governor's executive order, that has been having Zoom meetings. I've watched a couple of them in preparation to moderate this panel. They are nightmarish Zoom meetings in the sense that I've never seen so many, you know, Brady Bunch-style squares in my life. And the, as you can imagine, the discussion is difficult. There's a lot of talk about process. They'll be breaking up into working groups and working on specific issues such as police discipline, transparency, that type of thing. Their deadline to report to the city government, to the Common Council, is in April of 2021. That's going to be a big initiative, and I think a lot of people, especially the activists that we spoke to, are going to keep a very close eye on the product that comes out and whether or not it is watered down or does represent the kind of robust change that is needed.
Well, no more spoilers. Let's get to the program because it is something worth watching for everybody here in New York, especially in Albany where these leaders are. Again, we're airing a part of The Time for Reckoning produced by WMHT, and let's take a look.
Talked about the fact that Elazar Williams will never walk again. And there was no accountability for the officer that caused that harm. So what would it actually look like to have accountability? What would that look like in Albany specifically to have accountability? How do we make that happen?
Well, first thing is, I would say, is stop allowing the police to investigate the police. Let's give some power to the CPRB, right, that they can, one, they can initiate investigations, they can see a police officer's record, right, and they can recommend some sort of action that's binding to the police department throughout the state. The repeal of 58, y'all remember that, right? It allows us to see the misconduct records or the disciplinary records
supposed to be able to see it,
right? And what's the pushback immediately? As officers' records are being foiled, what's happening? The PBA and other entities are deciding, no, we're going to file injunctions with the court to block certain things in an officer's record. What are they trying to hide? Like, in all honesty, if
we can see that there is some sort of pattern that has developed over time that may have some ramifications on some act that happened, why wouldn't we want to see that?
You asked accountability, what does it look like? I'm kind of jaded, I won't lie to you, in the fact that I'm done begging for them to have a moral compass and to acknowledge us and treat us with respect and dignity. So now, what accountability looks like to me is independent oversight.
We shouldn't have to go through the police to get to the review board. Like, we should be able to go straight to the review board. How am I going to tell you, you're hurting me, stop hurting me, and I need to complain, I need management. And I'm gonna, can I talk to management? And I'm going to you and you're like, nah, cause I wanna keep hurting you. So you can't go to management because I don't feel like your complaint is valid. Yeah. How is that a thing that we have to go through? Why can't I just go straight and be like, okay, this was what happened, I'm being hurt in this way. Management, how can you help me? I think it's ridiculous, it's ludicrous that we have to go through the people that are hurting us to maybe get help, for them to decide if we deserve help.
Why isn't Mayor Sheehan standing up saying it can't be this way anymore? Why isn't the city council calling for a special, like, I don't know, community conversation that's actually led by the community, founded in the community, discussed by the community, decided by the community, because the current task force was not created by the community?
All right, Mayor Sheehan, you were the person called out at the end of that segment, so we'll begin with you. Is it fair to say that in the Capital Region, at least, police review boards tend to be well-intentioned but toothless? And if that is the case, what can be done to give them greater force?
So I think at the time that our review board was created and as it has evolved, it has been on the leading edge for the country. And I know that for people who want to see more, that doesn't mean much. But we have been seen across the country as a leader with respect to the scope of authority that's been given to our review board. And we also have an oversight of that board that happens through Albany Law School. The city spends over $260,000 a year to ensure that there is independent oversight of our civilian police review board, and we need to do more. So the review board itself has made recommendations, and those recommendations I'm sure will be included in a policy document that the council then needs to act on. And I believe we need to have that conversation. I agree, there should be no wrong door. You shouldn't have to go to a police department or a police station to file a complaint. So those are all changes that I support and that I hope come out of this process. And I also believe it's important to allow all community voices to be heard as part of this process. In the course of that short clip, I heard a number of really good ideas. And so it is my hope that they bring those ideas and ensure that those ideas are included in the final recommendations that we make as we transform our police department. And one final thing, you know, this idea of independent oversight, I think is really important. And that's why the chief and I have embraced the decision of the city's chief city auditor to bring in a third party to look at what we're doing, what we're measuring, what the results are of what we're measuring, what we're not measuring that we should be, and how do we compare to other police departments? How do we compare to what our community's expectations are of this police department? And that's happening independently. And I think that that is really important. Ultimately, I want to ensure that this city has a police department that reflects the wants, the desires, and the expectations of the members of this community. That's the goal, and that's what we're working towards.
So this is the CNA audit that's $80,000 to essentially assess bias within the department, correct?
Yes, it's that and it's more, right? They have done this work in other police departments. And to me, one of the things that they've done really well is to talk about what is the public facing accountability piece look like.
Mayor, very quickly, do you believe that the police review board should have subpoena power?
I think that we should be seriously looking at that. Subpoena power, look, I'm a lawyer, right? So I don't want to get an overly legalistic answer. But yes, I believe that they should have access to more information. And, you know, anytime something comes to a subpoena, it means that we're not giving somebody something that they think that they should already have. So I also think we need to look at that, right? What information are we providing? When are we providing it? This whole disciplinary process needs to be reviewed, both what happens internally and what happens externally. But I also don't want to race to the bottom. Just because other people don't get due process doesn't mean we should take away due process for everyone. I want to fight for due process for everyone. And so I think we have to be mindful of that as well.
Coriolis, how can a police review board be a better tool?
Well, you know, the activists talked about, we know for centuries the police department cannot independently, cannot investigate themselves. We need an independent investigation on police matters. It's clear, and the Citizen Review Board, giving them subpoena power, the right subpoena power, will help go a long way with making that happen. Because when we look at it as legislators, as council members, this was one of our key components. 50A was one of our key components. And also making into law a policy in the police department where certain officers, policy used to be where officers who owned in uniforms had to wear police cameras. Our legislative body said, no, we want every officer who interacts with people to have a camera on their body. That's another law that's in committee as well. And when people, the one misconception I really want people to understand, the body that the police chief and the mayor had to put together was an executive order by the governor of the state of New York. So when people look at it as, oh, this is something the mayor and the chief created, the governor created this body. The governor attached, if we didn't do this, we could lose financial dollars from the state.
Not just Albany, every community across the state is under this executive order.
The council did its job before this executive order came out. If the executive order never came out, we would be having these discussions. We'd be having these overviews of these laws that the council have put in place to someday pass. We would be having that discussion, and the police chief would be there, and the mayor would be there. We'd be having those committee discussions with the community coming in, talking about, oh, we don't agree with this part of the law. We'd be having those discussions already. So I don't want the activists to look at the body that the mayor and the chief had to put together as something that was trying to go against or hide the transparency.
Chief, would a more robust police review board, potentially with subpoena power, make your job easier in terms of interacting with the public and building public trust, or make your job more difficult in terms of your relations with your officers?
Both. I think that the public wants to see something more. And, you know, fundamentally, I agree with the mayor, council president, and with the activists. I think in our internal review and disciplinary process, there are some opportunities to bring some other people in and give them more input. Subpoena powers, you know, when you mention that to law enforcement personnel, mm-hmm. there's automatically resistance because there's this idea that
only suspects get subpoenaed.
Right, yeah. Well, exactly. That's exactly it, because that's the connotation that we have. But I think that if we can have some deeper conversations about this, mm-hmm. I think that we can have some understanding about what this really means. Mm-hmm. And what it really means is that the public is asking for some more transparency and some more input. They want access to documents in a timely and thorough manner. And so even before we get to the subpoena idea, I've had some conversations with my Office of Professional Standards. And my direction to them is to make sure that we are producing every single document that we are legally obligated to produce in a timely manner. Now, I know there's been some disagreements with this timeliness issue, and I get that, but it's not an excuse, but there are some reasons for that. But fundamentally, I'm with it. I think that it can work, but I think we have to have some understanding and some deeper conversations with all the parties involved.
All right, and finally, from our panel of activists, a discussion about the drive for transformation as opposed to the more familiar prescription for reform.
I'm listening to y'all, and we're talking about change, right? So what does that change look like? How do we get to transformation as opposed to reform?
There was a woman that was at a community conversation where we had a lot of members of the community. We had some representatives from the police department there, and they kept this
training kept coming up, right? It was like, yo, like, we do need more training. It was acknowledged by the representative of the police department, yes, we do need more training. And this woman just screamed, you don't need more training. You don't need more training, because you don't need training in white neighborhoods. You don't need training there. You know how to act there. You don't need training to be a human being there. Why do you need training to be human in my community? That was such a powerful moment, because I think I believe that already. I just had never articulated in that particular way, right? And she's right. Like, you don't need more training. It's something else going on there, right? And this idea of reform, I think, versus transformation. Reform is problematic because it's only acknowledging the symptoms of the issues. It's not acknowledging the causes, the root causes, right? And I think that until we're able to do that, and it's gonna take transformation to get to the root causes, to upend that tree and that root and find another way. And it's gonna take all of us to do that. It's gonna take our community coming together to be creative and figuring out how we should be moving forward with a community that works for all of us, not just some of us.
I appreciate that we've had the opportunity to have this conversation, that as Black people, we've had the opportunity to have this conversation, to have a platform, to have our voices heard. I hope that the people in power listen to what we've said, respond in a way that gives hope. I love being in community with y'all. Like, this is what we do, right? And so that's what we're gonna keep doing. And I hope that the mayor and the chief and city council and DA Soares are listening to it.
I do wanna dig a little bit deeper into what is going to be the city's big response to this historical moment, and that is the City of Albany Police Reform and Reinvention Collaborative. So more than 35 people, everybody else on the stage or appearing virtually like the mayor but me, are part of the organization. I have watched some of the Zoom discussions that have already taken place, more than a half dozen so far. They look agonizing in terms of virtual meetings. What is the hope that they will, that this collaborative will actually manage to bring the kind of change that clearly the activist community, or this portion of the activist community, is demanding? That this not be another kind of task force that produces a report, makes some kind of minor structural tweaks, and then moves on?
Well, I think the misconception is this task force is making these decisions, right? The task force is just tasked to come up, gather information, and that part of the task force make those recommendations. Those recommendations will be put towards the people. And so I would like to let the community know there is going to be a vetting of the documents that come in front of you by you as a citizen, and you have that voice to vet it. And as city council members, who you can hold accountable, we are the ones that are going to be passing this law, these reforms.
Mayor, the concern I've heard from some is that the sort of new generation of activists, especially from the Black Lives Matter movement, are not as included in the collaborative as perhaps they should be, certainly not as much as they want to be. Do you think that's a fair criticism? And what are your hopes for what comes out of this when the collaborative is done with its work? It's got a deadline of next April.
Well, I think that we do have a lot of young activists who we invited to be part of this collaborative. And so we want to ensure that those voices that are at the table bring with them the voices that want to be at that table. And that's why there's opportunity for public input. There are, we've broken down the task force into working groups, but knowing that there will be overlap. I would expect working groups to have overlapping recommendations around things like training, recruitment. What is it that we want from a police officer? What are we asking of a police officer? What should our police officers be responding to? And so, I think we want to ensure that all voices are at the table, and there is plenty of opportunity. Anybody who wants to submit information can submit information. Everything that these task force are doing and these working groups are doing is public. All of the documents that they have, the public has. The conversations that they're having, the public can hear. And there will be opportunities for the public to participate in those conversations. And so I'm looking forward to the work that is going to be done. And I'm also a person who believes very strongly in accountability. And we have to ensure that when we make changes, we have a way of making sure that the public is holding us to those changes. And we also have to look at where the gaps are. So one of the areas that is a real challenge are mental health calls. And this has been a subject of discussion from police departments across the country. We are already actively looking at those other models, and we know that we need to change. We know that we need to make changes. And the more people who make their voices heard, the better our decisions are going to be.
That was only the second half of that program, and we hope you'll join us for the rest of it. If you're watching us on WMHT, you can catch the full special on Monday, October 26th at 9 p.m. And if you're watching somewhere else in New York, we'll have the full program on YouTube and on our website. That's at nynow.org. The Time for Reckoning was produced by Nicole Van Slyke, one of our amazing producers here at WMHT, and a huge thank you to everyone who participated in the project. We'll see you here next week on New York Now. Have a great week and be well.